Welcome to the Protectors Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Piccolo.
Hey, this week I had Christina Wong on, a national security and Pentagon correspondent. Now, after the show, we had a quick conversation about an organization that she is very passionate about. It is called No One Left Behind. Now, this organization is a nonprofit that provides support to Iraqi and Afghanistan interpreters that have directly helped our U.S. troops overseas. She's very passionate about it. I'd ask that you please check out No One Left Behind. So it's nooneleftbehind.org. Hey, welcome to the Protectors Podcast, Christina. How you doing?
Hey, Jason. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I've been following you a bit on Twitter for a while now. And finally, our schedule is connected so we could actually have a podcast.
Yeah, I'm really excited, to be able to do it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, definitely. And we were talking before the show about how we kind of running into the same circles because you've been on OAN and I was on there a couple times and Fox is the next step. So it's kind of cool.
I hope so. I mean, not that OAN is that I don't like OAN, which I do, but it'd be fun to be on Fox News as well someday.
I always think it's kind of cool to kind of be on everything. Just so you can have that. So you just like your message gets across, especially when it gets into like the media and the news and everything.
So, I've been on BBC. I think BBC was my very, very first TV experience ever. That was nerve-wracking. I remember I had all these notes. I take, copious notes and I always want to be prepared. And so I remember I had like 5 pages of notes. And my handwriting was like so neat and so small that when I sat down on this chair in the studio and I had my notes in front of me, they looked like little ants running around on a page. And I just panicked. This was like 20 seconds before I'm going to go on air. And I'm just like, oh my God, I can't read anything. And I kind of freaked out. But it's like once those lights go on and like once you're on, you just go, you just perform. So I remember that clearly.
And the big thing is it's only like a 5 or 7 minutes, like tops. It's like you remember all this stuff and you're like, oh man, by the time you get done with it, it's like, it's over.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, I'm learning how to get in the groove of it. I mean, I've done like CBS and CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and then just, like Turkish TV, and it's fun, but it takes practice,
Now you've had like a different background, because the reason I really wanted to have you on, you just wrote an article about Viking fitness. Top enlisted military leaders validate their credentials with a tough physical training. But before we get to that article, like I'm looking at your background, and I'm like, you kind of did you always want to cover like SecDef and, defense issues or national security, or did you want to do something else?
Well, I think pretty early on, I wanted to be, first I wanted to be a journalist, and it was something that my older sister actually got me involved in. She started getting into it in college and she said, hey, this is something I think you'd like too. And so I started doing it in college and I really got hooked. Around the same time 9/11 happened, and this was early on in college, and that really, I think, changed everyone's lives at the time. So especially our generation. So I wanted to, I had never heard of Al-Qaeda or Bin Laden, and so I went pretty, I was pretty curious about, terrorism and like a lot of people in our generation, I wanted to learn, about the wars in Iraq, war in Afghanistan. But I wanted to cover it from a State Department angle. I wanted to cover international relations. So I studied international relations in school, and with a emphasis on Northeast Asian geopolitics and international relations. So, you know, Asia was sort of the area that I was most interested in. So I sort of gravitated towards the, you know, international news realm, but I wanted to cover state and diplomacy, and I started learning about the Afghan war from a State Department perspective. And of course, you know, it's not long before I sort of discover this is, you know, this is a war where, yeah, I mean, this is being fought by troops and the military. And I was at ABC News, and I wanted to be their State Department correspondent, producer, reporter, but they had someone, and I was, and as I got more interested in the military angle, they were very open and welcoming, and let me, you know, just kind of do whatever I wanted to on that, and so I started covering the Afghanistan war. You know, I went really, really deep into counterinsurgency. And, you know, this was a time when it was Stanley McChrystal, I think, was in charge. And then you had David Petraeus, and General Odierno was still around. And so I got, you know, pretty steeped into the, you know, covering the wars, Iraq and Afghanistan at the time. And then I started covering vet issues and, you know, military spouses and families and wounded warriors. And I just really, really got hooked because the stories are just amazing. You know, nowhere else in life are you going to meet such incredible people who've done such incredible things. You know, I had met diplomats, I had, you know, run in the think tank circles, and there was just this, in my opinion, a huge difference between like the State Department folks and the DOD folks. And I just kind of felt like, you know, the military DOD folks, that's, you know, more my scene than State Department. And so, I went from ABC to the Washington Times to cover the Pentagon full time. And that was 2012. And that was the first time that I started covering the Pentagon exclusively for my full time beat.
Yeah. And that kind of shows you, like a lot of the listeners too, that, and I could attest to it too, is that when you run into like military families and stuff like that, and military members and veterans and everything, it's different because they do so much for so little. You know, when you're running around with like these think tanks and all these people that are, you know, rolling into the parking lot with their brand new Mercedes, you're talking to Sergeant so-and-so who just got the Medal of Honor, who's driving like a 1985 Honda Civic, but he doesn't expect more, or she doesn't expect more. It's just this selfless sacrifice, man. And, you know, it's 99.999%. You're always going to find someone out there who's like, hey, you know what? I deserve this. I deserve that. But overall, it's like, and I could see how you could get into it, especially when you really research your articles. You know, gone are the days when you want to follow someone that does the hip pocket journalism, which is like, you know, the 5 to 7 minute sound bites talking about the same things over and over again. Because we talked about right before. It's like, you know, when you go on now, you have to have a bunch of topics and you have to be well known, you know, well versed.
And I just loved when, you know, so when I started covering the Pentagon, I mean, that was one of my best, I wouldn't say jobs, but just that time from 2012 to 2014, that's all I had to cover was the Pentagon. And at that time, you know, I showed up every single day. There were press briefings every day, and you could really get steeped, you know, and you got to know everyone on the beat. And that was really kind of like a, you know, that was the time before we were all required to write like 6 blog posts a day, you know, like speaking of, you know, how things have changed and how we have to be well-versed in everything. So it was just a really fun time. I went to Afghanistan. I went to Gitmo 3 times. I traveled, you know, around with the defense officials. And like, so for me, that was just a really just a wonderful time where I get to just focus on, you know, get really deep into defense that, you know, I don't think you can do that nowadays as much.
No, you can't. Everything nowadays is, you just have to focus on such a general area. And plus, you know this, as in journalism world, there's just, the jobs aren't there like they used to. They want these really snapshot blogs and posts, and it's tough. I can imagine.
Yeah. And so after the Washington Times, I went to The Hill. And speaking of like snapshots, I mean, I had a good time, you know, also at The Hill. But it was interesting because that, you know, that time frame from like 2000, I believe it's 14 to 17, you really saw the whole, you saw the landscape change. I mean, I've seen the landscape change from like early 2000s, you know, until, but I mean, just in those 3 years of 2014 to 2017, you saw just, you saw more outlets start going more down the clickbait route, you know, and you start seeing articles get shorter, and just there was more of an emphasis on aggregation, and you didn't have that shoe leather journalism, you know, that you just talked about. It was just, you're sitting at your computer, you're gathering stuff online, whether it's like a email or Twitter. I mean, nowadays you don't have to talk to anyone. You could just go on Twitter
And look at their quote, and you can write 400
exactly.
words.
Yep. Yep, that is, I mean, that's kind of, I wouldn't say that's the standard, but, you know, whereas maybe that would have been maybe frowned upon a couple years ago, it's the norm today, you know?
Well, that brings me to your article. I mean, that's a great leeway right into it, because you're digging deeper into topics that people want to read about. I don't know about, you know, I could say, I love throwing percentages out there, like 99%, but I could say a lot of, like, you know, the military LEO audience, they want substance. So you just wrote this article, and it's called, now it's in Breitbart, right?
Breitbart. Yeah.
Breitbart. I can't get it. I can never get that done. That's why I never say it. I'm usually like, you wrote it in where? But oh man.
Well, no one can spell it either, so
I know. I'm just like, you know, the B and T and something in there. I don't know. Sometimes I talk about them. But it's called Viking Fitness. Top enlisted military leaders validate their credentials with tough physical training. You know, I'm prior enlisted, I'm prior officer, tons of friends still in the service, tons of friends, veterans, and they always want people to lead by example. So I just want to read this one. So you went out, you interviewed a bunch of top enlisted sergeant majors.
And awesome.
This one quote here is awesome. And then you can talk about the article, but I like this one. It's like, the workout session was devised and led by Army Command Sergeant Major John Troxwell, the top senior enlisted officer in the U.S. military. He has dubbed the workout, only somewhat jokingly, CH Viking PT, which stands for Carry Heavy Shit Viking Physical Training. I love it. But this, I know, I love that, because they're doing CrossFit, they're doing all sorts of crazy stuff. I'm going to link to the article later on, but I want to read this part.
Oh,
definitely. People look at me or any senior leader. They see my rank here. They see what I've served in combat. I've got special skills, combat special skill badges. I have all the stuff. You read my bio. You know, I've got a master's degree, but none of that means anything if I'm not willing to do the things that I expect every E1 and above should do, if I'm not willing to share in our hardships that they are. And for the audience, an E1 is like your lowest enlisted rank. So what they're doing is they're saying, hey, you know what? If you're going to lead these troops and you're going to be one of the sergeant majors, you better get your ass out there and show them that you're going to do the same things that you expect them to do. So
it was inspiring.
So how did this come about?
Yeah. So, It came about months ago. I was friends with a chief foreign officer. She took me to the British Embassy for an event that she helps to put on every year. It's called the Catherin Yomp, and they take wounded warriors to Scotland, and they have them do these, you know, dozens of miles marches. So I don't know, but it's like an insane amount of miles. I mean, I think it's something like maybe 40 miles, maybe even more, but it's like a multi-day hike. And so they take these wounded warriors out there, and you could do different, they have different levels. So they, you know, they have, I think, a bronze level and the, you know, other levels. And so, you know, the chief warrant officer was friends with Command Sergeant Major Troxell. And I had known him from the Pentagon, but, you know, I talked to him and we were discussing, you know, fitness. And it was something that I had thought about, you know, previously. So we discussed that then. And it was funny because he revealed to me that Mattis said, "I don't want, you know, no more fatties." he said no more fatties in the military. That just really stuck with me. And, you know, with the pace of news, it was just something that I couldn't get, you know, couldn't delve into because, you know, there's just no time to go deep. There's, you know, news just exploding everywhere every day. So something I just kind of put on the back burner. And then of course, Mattis left but, you know, my interest in the story did not go away. I've been watching Sergeant Major Troxell just do this, continue working out and just post his workouts on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter and just kind of start working out really, really hard, you know, and he posts his runs. So every day he's doing like 12 miles or, you know, at the least, I think 5 miles. And at the same time, you know, I know that fitness was something that Mattis really cared about, because, you know, he himself was very physically fit and he wanted to keep exacting standards. And so I've been wanting to do this story for months. And so, Troxell, he had a panel about 2 weeks ago with all the senior enlisted from across the force, you know, all the geographic commands, you know, that's like AFRICOM and UCOM and Indo-Pacific Command, Indo-PACOM, and as well as a functional command. So there's a Cyber Command and NSA and all these, you know, Special Operations Command. And so they were all getting together. They get together twice a year. And they were all going to get together, and Troxell was going to put them through this Viking, you know, CHS Viking PT. And I happened to run into him in the hallway of the Pentagon, and I had scheduled an interview with him to talk about fitness. He goes, "Hey, why don't you come out? We're going to do this. We're going to be working out tomorrow." So I'm like, "Whoa, tomorrow?" And it's at 6 a.m., right? He goes, "Be there at 6 a.m. So, you know, I had to get everything, you know, in order, and, you know, got up at 5, maybe 4:45, and, you know, was out to Fort Myer at 5, you know, slightly before 6, and yeah, and just sort of, you know, watch them for like the next hour in July heat. You know, right now it's like 90 something degrees outside. And, you know, do all this stuff. And it's not easy. What they did was not easy. So they had different stations. They had 6 stationary stations. So each station had like a litter, a tire. Another one had a tire and sledgehammers. Another one had these heavy punching bags, water bags, medicine balls. They were like 100 pounds. And, you know, I don't know about you, but for me, that's barely liftable. I couldn't even lift the 100-pound medicine ball to my shoulders. You know, I got it like halfway up, and then I couldn't pick it up anymore. And they took these objects and they carried them for 500 meters, which is about a third of a mile. So each station they would do that. So each station was a third of a mile with this really, really, really heavy stuff. And there was this rock that was like almost 100 pounds, and it was sharp, it had sharp edges, so it was like cutting into everyone's skin, you know?
I saw the pictures of that, yeah.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, I picked up a water bag. That was, it took me like 2 tries to pick up the water bag. I couldn't get the medicine ball up. And so people, including, you know, there were 2 females, including one that was smaller than me, she would pick up the 100-pound ball and walk, you know, walk that third, you know, quarter, more than a quarter mile. Of course, they could, there were different objects at each station, so they could kind of switch whatever they needed to do to get over the line. But it was some hard stuff because, I mean, the first round, everyone's all cheery and, you know, kind of running. And the second round, everyone's like panting, they're sweating, you know, they're, it's hot, it's, you know, the sun's coming up, it's probably at that time, like, you know, already mid-80s, going up quickly. So it was really inspiring to me, because, you know, I myself am trying to get fit, and I've been working out a lot, and just to see, like, you know, the sergeant major said, just to see, like, old guys out there doing this is just really inspiring.
Yeah, and that's one thing they say in the art. Well, you say in the article, it says, more than fitness, it's toughness. Combat is brutal and unforgiving, and so we have to prepare for that. We have this kind of indoor generation now that is in on machines and things like that. And as the article goes on, you see these pictures, and you see that, hey, you know what? You talk about there's so many fat bodies out there who can't deploy. And, you know, there are so many. And that's the thing is, like, you head down to the Pentagon, and in the Army, at least, you have combat patches on your right arm. And you're seeing these senior leaders that have never deployed overseas. And I'm like, how does that happen if we've been at war for, you know, 18, 19 years now? So it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Some people apparently needed, you know, some sort of dental appointment or some sort of, you know, they were just too obese and they didn't meet the standards. It was administrative, but Mathis really, you know, made it a priority to, you know, get these folks out of there. And as Troxell said, I mean, this obesity, it's a $5 billion a year problem. And, you know, it is really hard just to do your job, stay on your feet. If you're carrying that extra weight, you know, even as a journalist, you know, or even as anyone, you know, just carrying that extra weight is, you know, hard on your joints.
Ugh. So, I know it. You know, I know it. I'm like, I'm the guy who takes the selfies from, like, you know, the head up, so you don't see any of the bodies. So.
I don't want to be a downer here. I mean, you know,
no, but it's
good. I do
good.
That too.
Like,
so,
you see, the long story short is that we need more journalism that is going to be investigative journalism that's going to look into these things. Because, you know, I want to know these stories. You're not hearing it from the senior leaders. You're not hearing it unless you have somewhere to find it. And there's just simply nowhere right now.
And, you know, I think, you know, just going back to our discussion about the media right now, I think there's a rush right now to get the most, you know, damning scoop on whatever leader it is, you know, whether it's like Trump or whether it's the you know, Pentagon leader. And of course, accountability definitely matters, you know, but I think they're in just my humble opinion, they're, you know, someone could look at this story and be like, oh, it's just fitness, who cares, you know, but it's a really important thing. I mean, if you've got, you know, more than 100,000 troops who, you know, who can't deploy because of fitness. And
yeah.
I mean, beyond that, I mean, it's your life. And I don't think we, you know, troops and just the general public, I don't think we focus enough on our fitness. And, you know, as you get older, I mean, something for me in the last 2 years, I mean, as we're talking about desk journalism, I mean, you spend more time at your desk than ever. And I find myself sitting more than ever, and it just gets harder to lose that weight and, you know, easier to gain. And so, yeah, so this is something that I think hopefully has a wide audience, and there's a lot of interest in, I hope.
No, there is. And, you know, you brought up Mattis, and one of the quotes in the paper is, as I look what we could be asked to do as Department of Defense in terms of a North Korea scenario or Russia or China or Iran, you know, as Secretary Mattis used to say, we got to have all hands on deck. If we're going to fight against North Korea, we need everybody. And there's a certain population who are not deployed. And that's you can't have 100,000 people out of such a small force right now non-deployable.
Yeah. And, you know, this goes back to the origins of the story. 2 years ago, Troxell held the same, held a similar panel of the senior enlisted leaders when they came to visit 2 years ago. And he had them sit in a panel and discuss problems all around the world. And this was one of the things that came up, you know, what future war is going to look like. And, you know, in a North Korea scenario, I think they're thinking it's, you know, hand-to-hand combat in a degraded environment where you don't have, you know, GPS, or you just have to act on your own, and you need to be fit if you're doing hand-to-hand combat. And he mentioned, you know, I would check the transcript, but this is, you know, from what I recall 2 years ago, but he talked then about toughness, combat toughness. He said, nowadays, you know, kids are growing up indoors, they're playing video games, they're not going outside, they're not, I think he said, you know, they're kids aren't fighting anymore, you know, they're not having like the fist fight in the yard, and they don't know, they get the basic training without ever having gotten in the fight or knowing what it's like to hit someone, you know. And so this was something I think that's been on his mind for a long time, as well. It's just how do you breed that toughness into people who don't know, who didn't grow up that way.
Yeah, you know, when I was a kid, you know, it was like playing war outside with your friends and running around. You know, the biggest technology you had was like Atari 2600. So it's just like, there's no reason to stay inside. You got to get out there to have fun.
Yeah. I remember, you know, kickball in my front yard and, you know, climbing trees and biking and, you know, roller skating and all sorts of stuff. And actually, I got into a couple of fights with my older sister. She's kind of a bully. So
that's what siblings are.
I didn't have
for.
To look far. Exactly. And I think, you know, now you've got the lawnmower parent, you know, that's always afraid of their child, you know, falling mm-hmm. down or getting hurt or anything. And so, yeah, it's a whole different generation.
And I had two brothers that were boxers, and they used to box in Paterson, New Jersey. And, you know, there's a reason I don't box is because I went in a ring with them. And this is Lou Costello. You remember Abbott Costello? He had a ring at Paterson.
No.
Well, oh my gosh. You know, I'm gonna link to Lou Abbott and Costello. Oh my gosh. They're a comedian group from like the early 1900s.
Oh, okay.
Not early 1900s, but pretty close. But
okay, well, I wasn't alive then, so
neither was I. But they there was a boxing gym. Oh my gosh, I keep dating myself with the podcast. I keep forgetting I'm closer
it's
to 50
inevitable.
Than I am 40. I'm like, oh no. Anyway, because I'm thinking,
everyone.
I'm like, oh my gosh, Evan Costello. I'm like, everybody knows them. But they have a gym in Paterson, New Jersey, which is a really rough area. And my brother's a boxer, and they brought me down there after work one day because we used to all clean cars when we were kids. And my brother just whacked me in the side of the head. And I was like, you know what? I think this isn't for me. So I'm like, I never boxed back then. We'd always fight and wrestle and everything, but you just don't have that kind of stuff anymore.
Yeah.
But there's no boxing gym where
they
kids
are going. Yeah. That's hardcore, but you joined the army, so.
Yeah, I did. I forgot about that. Never forget about that. Hey, Christina, so we could find you everywhere. You are on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. Is there anything you want to promote?
Well, let's see. If you want to follow my fitness, you know, journey, that's on Instagram. Yeah. And right now it's just the, you know, head, you know, the neck up shots, but, you know, any motivation is welcome. So I post these pictures of myself mostly for motivation every time I come out of a workout looking really gross and sweaty. So it's never really my best shots, but, you know, it helps keep me, honest when, you know, I'm working out and trying to get in shape. And I think in December, I'm going to try doing the workout with Troxell. He's going to do it again. So I'm going to try to participate this time.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to link
we'll
to everything. I would say I'm going to be out there, but I'm not going to make any promises, but I'm going to link
to
the article.
Christina
Wong is all over the place. She's you're going to find her on OAN. You're going to find her on Breitbart. You're going to find her everywhere. The Hill?
I do have a Facebook page. No, I'm not doing anything at The Hill anymore. So I keep it contained. There's only, you know, I'm busy enough, right? I don't want to get into too much, at least not yet. You know, there's someday I'd like to write a book, but that time is not yet.
Everybody's got to write a book.
Yes, exactly. You know.
So I am going to link to everything. Now, one other thing I've started doing with the Protectors is there any charities or anything you'd like a shout out for?
Yes. So one charity that is near and dear to my heart is No One Left Behind. And that is for Iraq and Afghan interpreters who, you know, need help. They need assistance to, you know, apply for their visas and come over to the U.S. And even when they get to the U.S., I think they need help just sort of navigating and settling. And so for my birthday this year, I held like a mini Facebook fundraiser for them. But No One Left Behind, they're just a great organization. And it's a way to give back to the troops also, because you know, the interpreters, as you know, they deployed, they were right by our men and women in uniform, and they kept them safe. And so some of them want to come over here, and, you know, they're very patriotic, and, you know, so why not help them out?
Perfect. Yeah. I'll do a shout out to them in the beginning of the podcast.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me on. This was great. Really nice to talk to you.
You too.
All right.
Thanks a lot, Christina.